Hey, Josh.
Hey, Nate. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty great. Just had a contractor in my house, and we're doing a bunch of renos and stuff, and so, like, tons of things to think about, but yeah, good fun.
Okay. Cool.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. We've got a sickness running through the household. You know, it starts with one kid and gets to another and hope that, you know, don't totally get to the parents, but it's inevitable, you know.
Worst.
But today we have a guest, a special guest. We have Colleen here with us. Schechter, is that how you actually say your last name? I don't know if I've ever actually said the words.
It's Schnettler.
Schneller. Oh, why do I say Schechter? Why? So I was just totally off on that. Oh yeah, you're right. I look at it now and I don't know why that is what your name is in my head. Although I just refer to you as Colleen in my head. So.
That works.
Okay. Well, so yeah, we have Colleen here. Nate, why don't you introduce her a little bit more than my name fumbling?
So. Well, it's good to have you on, Colleen. Colleen is a friend of ours. Builds software and talks about SaaS startup-y things. And so obviously big friend of the show. And we want to catch up with Colleen, hear how things are going, and talk about some SaaS stuff.
Yeah, I'm super pumped to be here. Talking about SaaS stuff is literally my most favorite thing to do. And we just had spring break, so I was hanging out with a lot of people who find it to be incredibly boring. So, you know, I need my fill of SaaS talk.
Yeah, I feel your pain. Yeah.
Well, a little known fact, if you have been a listener for a long time or happen to stumble upon our earlier episodes or even our recent 100th episode, I think we mentioned it too, which Colleen was part of the reason we started our own podcast too. So Colleen, I don't know if you knew that 100%, but it was basically with you and Michelle's podcast back in the day. It was sort of this idea of having someone further along and someone kind of earlier in their journey. And Nate's like, hey, we should try that format. Like sort of like, Software Social was back in the day, which I know has not been recording for quite some time. Right. So,
yeah, I love that you said back in the day. It doesn't feel like that long ago, but
right.
It was at least, we haven't recorded for at least a year. I think we stopped a year or 18 months ago. I didn't know that. So I love that. That's awesome. I'm so glad like we inspired you guys to start this.
Yeah, it was a great way to get Josh to give me free advice. So, you know.
I know. I mean, that was why I was like, Michelle, we should just put this on the air. So it's a win-win for everyone.
And then I guess speeding up, like Colleen has had a couple different SaaSes over this time period too, right? And kind of get us up to speed on where you are with your own SaaS products and SaaS journey.
Yeah, so the very short story of what has been a very long journey is as a Ruby on Rails developer, left my full-time job to do consulting full-time, as most people do as they start walking towards SaaS. While I was consulting, I started my first side project / SaaS called Simple File Upload. And that's when I had the podcast. So you can go hear about that on Software Social. I grew that to about 2,500 MRR and I still have it. And it's awesome and it's great. But I split my focus or I stopped really focusing on that to start a different company with some friends. And that was called Hammerstone. More ambitious in scope, I would say, that company. And we started with a product that was a piece of software that you purchased. So not a SaaS. And that we actually ended up selling that. Whew. And then we raised money and then my co-founder left. And so basically I had to start over. So I'm about 3 months into the new company, which is called Hello Query, which is just me now. And essentially it's kind of crazy because this has been, you know, I just summed up several years, but I'm only 3 months into this new business, Hello Query. Lots of ups and downs with the co-founder thing, the raising money thing, but I do it full time right now, and that's what I'm focused on. And Hello Query is your AI data analyst for your database.
Okay.
Cool. No, it's a lot.
Wow, that's a lot to take in. Wow, like you did a lot.
If you
You did a lot in those years. Like that's incredible. And like you still have Simple File Upload, right? Like that's still running?
I do. It's such an interesting thing with a small SaaS like that, because the first thing I think you guys can both relate to is you always move the bar on yourself. Like I remember when I started Simple File Upload, I was like, oh my gosh, if I made $1,000 a month, that would be like the most amazing thing ever. And now I'm like, oh yeah, you know, it's okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like whatever. You just, you're like, okay.
Another $100 a month.
Right. Okay. It's funny how those things change, but I still have Simple File Upload because I don't know. Why not? It's just, I mean, it's as close to passive income as you can get. And I like having it as an asset, but I don't really spend any time on it right now.
Yeah. It's fun to have it as like a, you know, just in your back pocket, something to mess around with if you're bored someday.
Totally. And it's kind of neat because I still think there's opportunity with it. I just don't have the time for it right now. And I can dog food my new product using my current product. So there's like all this, you know, all these ways it works together.
Yes. This is crazy. There's like so many parallels to my life. It's so neat.
Except the whole like raising and a co-founder and Tiny Seed, right? It was you joined Tiny Seed.
Yeah, I raised from Tiny Seed, which I'd highly recommend if anyone is looking to join an accelerator. It's been a great experience, especially since we kind of imploded. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. The business kind of imploded, and they have been incredibly supportive throughout the entire process. So having an investor like that it's just different than, you know, having a really high pressure VC type investor.
Right. Or like needing to keep hitting up your friends and feeling like a nag on like everyone else's resources. I don't know. Yeah. Not that you were. I'm not saying that you were, but just
yeah, Josh, you don't like our pep talks
that we talked about. No, I love our pep talks. But that self-talk of like, hey, I'm trying to get help on things, but then, hey, you know what? You have investors and they sort of they knew that what they were signing up for, like to help people out.
Yeah.
So I think that's great. So
there was this moment right after my co-founder and I parted ways where, I mean, everything was just bad. And I sat down with the lead investor of Tiny Seed and I was sure he was going to be like, just give me my money back and go away. And he didn't do that at all. He was like, so calm, right? Because this stuff, like, this is just the way of the world in startups. It's a roller coaster. Right. He was like, these things happen. Like,
it happens, right?
It happens. Like you need to pivot. You need to pivot again. That's just the game. Like that's what you do. I think we are so desensitized in a bad way, like with the success stories on Twitter that makes you think everyone is launching an app and hitting, you know, 1 million ARR in 6 months.
Right.
And it's not what's happening. That's not really how it works.
Yeah. Well, and also when it's your thing that you spent a lot of time working on, I think the emotions are that much stronger, right? It's like you've spent, you know, a year of your life or 6 months or whatever it is, just trying to get this thing to go. And then, you know, it doesn't work out or whatever happens. And I think that's a lot more difficult emotionally than for someone on the outside.
Yeah, agree.
I think I thought of another interesting parallel, like as Nate, you were talking about having, you know, all these things that she's done. And you also had an alignment earlier too, where Simple File Upload and Status List, I think, were also born out of a similar, like, go to market motion. They're both Heroku like things. They're in that idea of like, hey, I'm going to at least build in a area of that there is a distribution platform on. So I don't know, just thinking of now I'm thinking about all these parallels. So
Yeah.
We both went Heroku early. And I mean, I feel like it was a good call. Like, I don't know. Mm. You still have Status List, don't you?
Yeah. And it doesn't make as much a Simple File Upload, but it's like, it's enough that it's like, hey, that's kind of neat. And I let it sit in the background for the most part too. And fiddle around with it once in a while. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But tell us about Hello Query.
Hello Query. So, man, it is just, it's been a roller coaster. So Hello Query is, when I introduced it, I said your AI data analyst. It's really right now, it's like a UI layer on top of your database. Mm-hmm. And so it's still very, very early. I'm in the 0 to 1. I'm in the 0 to 1 phase right now, which is something I love to talk about. I mean, we can talk more about what 0 to 1 looks like, whatever phase you guys want to talk about. But it's this idea that there should be a better way to build reports on top of your database. It's a very crowded space, but through customer research, what I discovered was there are a lot of tools, but there aren't a lot of tools that are easy to use. And we have this convergence of AI now, like, and so I think there's really opportunity to use the AI as a feature of a product to help you build smarter reports. But I mean, it's super early. I'm trying everything right now. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out, I strongly believe when I look at like product design and product building, in 5 years, people are going to be interfacing with their database data using natural language at least 80% of the time. 80% of people who need access to their database, your marketers, your CEOs, your finance teams, are going to have some kind of AI built in. Now, will it be natural language to SQL? I don't know if it's going to be that stark, but AI is going to help you sort and filter and get to your data that you need. Like, I really believe that. And so getting into the space now, it was partially because I wanted to play in the AI space. I was really interested in what was possible and learning about it. And I wanted to build something on top of these APIs. And the customer research I had done. So the previous product we had that we sold was a piece of software that helped you build filters on top of your existing table views. Mm-hmm. So a different way to attack the problem, but essentially the same problem solving the same problem, which is how do you build reports or how do you get data out of your database? And so yeah, that's a lot of words, but basically it's your AI database assistant. I don't know. I'm about to change the website, so I'm not sure. But UI on top of your database data. Reports, best way to get reports out of your database, chat with your database. That's basically what it does.
So where are you on this research path now? Like, I know previous you were talking to customers getting a lot, or talking to prospects, talking to internal teams, like where's that? Where's
yeah.
that?
From? So what's really mostly talking to people, but I'm in the phase now. Okay. So this is such an interesting topic, which I'm sure you guys have covered in previous episodes, but would love to talk to you a little bit about, because there's such a like disconnect or like disagreement in the world about, do you need a product before you can sell it? Should you sell before you have a product? I've done both. I mean, I've done both.
There.
Nate has feelings about this. I can tell. I am now firmly in the camp of talk to people, build something small, put it in front of them. Because even when people try not to lie to you, they will lie to you.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Like, until they actually have even the finished product. It's like, until you have like the finished product, you don't really know what's going to happen, I don't think. I've just seen that with clients, like consulting clients, and with, just with Testing Taxi that I've been working on, like just where people don't actually, they can't visualize it. They can't understand how their life will change with it until they've actually tried it. And even then, they'll still find ways to, you know, not tell you quite what you're hoping to understand.
Yeah, so this is my new thing.
Let's pick that apart. So you said sell first, right? So just, is that what you said? You said sell it first. So what does that mean to you? Is it actually like taking money to the bank sell, or like sign up and, you know, verbally commit to something sell? Like what is, or put it on landing page and sell and get someone to sign up?
You know, who is it? It's the Tuple founder, whose name?
Ben Orsted.
He's got this whole, like, that is his, like, Bible, right? He's like, you should pre-sell your product to 20 people, have $20,000 of pre-sales in the bank before you build the product. That's great. That's a good way to build a product. But I don't think even that is not as strong of a signal as we believe it is. Like when our previous product was called Refine, we pre-sold $5,000 and we had money in the bank, $5,000 of commitment from people. Like, so everything about that product made us think it was going to work. The fact that it didn't work is still, we're still like, darn it. But we had money in the bank. Everything pointed to this is going to be the right thing. And then There's so many factors though. Like people will prepay for an idea, right? They'll prepay for you. They'll prepay for your vision. But will they churn? Will they continue to pay? Do they just think, is it like a gym membership where they think they're going to use it, but when push comes to shove, it's not integrated in their workflow? They think that the way you and they think it will work in their workflow. Like, I guess what I'm saying is there's no silver bullet. So
sure.
I feel like one of the, I know, right? I don't have the answer. I wish I had the secret. I don't know. So that's what I mean by pre-sell, but I think that that's a really, really good sign. Like, that's nothing wrong with that. But what we found is it didn't integrate in people's workflows the way we and they even thought it would. And right. So that's why that one didn't work for us.
That makes sense. So they could have, like, especially with this, this is very workflow ingrained, right? It's into day-to-day ingrained.
Yeah.
So if they might have swiped their credit card, and what you were saying and what they heard of how it would work might have been two different things, right? Everyone kind of like associates their day-to-day, and it's like, oh, it's going to do this, this, and this because she said this, even though you were like slightly torqued and facing, you know, 20 degrees a different direction saying this, and it might have only had, you know, 20% crossover. And then when it was like, but it was the wrong 20%. And now when it came to having it in hand and in day-to-day, or they saw the magic for that one thing and they're like, oh yeah, actually, I don't really have that much use for this. It's like, oh. Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of what happened. And the problem of the space that I'm in is reports are kind of a nice to have, depending on your business use case. Depends, right?
I feel like every app that I make, the reports actually end up being the thing that the person with the biggest salary wants. And so
that's a good point.
Because of that, I think there's security there. Like the CEO wants to see the report, the CFO, right? They all need that. So I think
that's
like for your thing, I wonder if it maybe the thing to test is like, do they actually want to dive into the numbers more? And is it like actually useful to be able to talk in natural language? Or do they just get their minion to go do that?
Right. And so where I am now with this is I've got three people who said, when you add this feature, I will pay for it. So I'm going to add the feature. I guess what I'm trying to communicate is like, I and probably your listeners and you too as well consume so much startup content. And I think as developers, we're yelled at over and over and over, don't build, don't build, don't build, because developers tend to make the mistake of building too much. And now I'm trying to, I'm so worried about wasting time, right? Mm. Like, you guys are parents, you're working parents, right?
Yeah.
You don't have time. Like, you don't have like, you know, hours and hours to just sit around and think deep thoughts. So I'm so attuned to how I spend my time that I worry about wasting it. And because of that, I think I have overcorrected in terms of not building enough. And so with this product, I'm trying to swing the pendulum back and build a little bit more, because to what Nate was saying, man, I think sometimes people just need it in their hands to really, really get it ingrained in part of their workflow.
Yeah. I wonder though, if there is something to spending a bunch of time, like trying to develop an understanding for the customer, like a deep understanding. I just think of that, like with my latest product with Testing Taxi, I don't think I fully understood the tester ecosystem as much as I thought I did. Because I think one of the reasons I think it's not really going is because the relationship between the tester and the manager in the organization is different than I thought it was. I thought that they were all efficiency driven. And I think that there's something else going on there that I didn't fully understand. But if I had taken some careful time to think and try to understand those people, I might have been able to tease it out earlier. Or I was just in denial. Because I think there is something where you can do a shortcut a little bit of what do I think these people actually want and actually need? Not what they're telling me, but like reading between the lines and all that. And you have to take some, you know, take some salt with it and say, you know, it's not for sure, but to at least try and avoid, you know, developing something and, you know, going all the way down a rabbit trail you don't need to go down.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. Like, I absolutely think like most people code too much and don't talk to people enough. I agree with that.
I mean, it's interesting because, you know, the last our last episode, we talked about, and we talked about this, I think we called it emerging, like an going after like an emerging problem or an emerging market, something where it's a little more nebulous. And I think that's the area you guys are both talking about with like testing taxi and Hello Query, right? Where you have to lean more on customer research and really understanding the nuances of their workflows. And, you know, they're not going to be able, even though they'll say they'll use it, you can't 100% trust. Like, I can't prove it until you see it. And that's where, you know, it goes back to the ideas of MVPs. And you're like, hey, I want to build it. I want to put it in their hands. And I want to make sure that, like, at least as I'm going along this journey with them, it's like, let's go from, you know, block to block, like a canal. Let's fill up one area and lock in and like, okay, we're this far. Now let me build the next canal and get to the next part. And it's interesting because obviously like both of you have the other side. You have these very well proven, what Nate and I always call like commodity products, not to diss it ourselves, but we're just like, yeah, you know what? This is a well-known problem. There are well-hardened ideas and solutions of how people will solve it, where, you know, it's basically where status list and simple file upload sort of live, right? So it's interesting that you both have flip-flopped on both of those those sides. And I think right now, I know, Colleen, you are in this mode of like, hey, I took the investor money. I'm like committed to this. I have sort of some traction and some direction and some theses here that, you know, I want to, you know, check all these boxes and make sure if I decide to move on to something else that I've pulled all the levers, tested all the areas, like looked under every nook and cranny just to make sure that this is, you know, or like I don't have any regrets, or like you were even saying, fear of wasting time. And also this fear of like, hey, did I waste my time? I actually want to just make sure if I did, at least I covered the large surface area of the problem. I don't know.
I mean, this is another great indie hacker topic though, is like sunk cost fallacy. Like when do you pivot? Yeah. When do you say, and you know what's so, I think it's Jason Cohen has this article that's all advice is true. And it's like for every case of someone pivoting 15 times to find the right idea, you'll find the person who spent 5 years on a single idea and they both made it, right? So it's like, to your point, Josh, for me, that is always the big question is this a sunk cost? Like, is this the right thing to be working on? Is this market too crowded? I mean, I'd also love to hear what you guys think about SaaS in general, because it feels like the it's flooded. Like, it just feels like the market is flooded. So trying to carve out a niche, like I've looked at Hello Query, I've looked at all of these different like data sources I can sit on top of. I mean, because, you know, you usually hear about someone having success by they grab a really small niche. Like, I'm going to sit on top of ServiceNow data or Salesforce data or whatever. And man, there is something in every single space. So, you know, it just feels harder now than maybe 5 to 10 years ago.
I guess maybe that's hard because it's basically those seem obvious in hindsight now. It's like everyone has this pattern and then it goes through all these niches. Like you said, if it's someone that is like setting up shop for arguably, let's say, you know, whatever niche in with ServiceNow data, and it's like, hey, yeah, I'm going to do images for ServiceNow, whatever. I know that doesn't make any sense, but you kind of set up shop and camp in those areas. And and I don't know, I came across a recent one, which I feel like all of these are just hard to see them now, but then, you know, again, 3 years later, you're like, oh yeah, that was sitting right there. I just didn't see it. Cause there's like a, like you talked about aggregation of data. And I started recently playing with this tool called Clay. Have you guys seen that one?
No. Mm-mm.
I think it's clay.com or clay.io, but it's pretty neat. It's almost, as I would quickly describe it, it's almost like take your Airtable, and it's like an Airtable type of interface. You could just input, you know, some data like a spreadsheet, like a domain names, and then you can have it go like, you know, fetch contact information. It's good for outbound. It's good for different things. But they even integrated like a Clay web crawler. So you can be like, go to a website, like speak to it like an AI, go pull their brand colors and like put it in this field. So it's like this data retrieval. But what they've also done is they've layered on all the different sources of outbound data there is out there. So whether it's like Apollo or, I don't know, there's like millions of data sources, right? Zoom info, all these types of things. And they have this little thing. They're like, okay, we have this thing called a, you know, a ladder or a waterfall. So it basically goes through all the different providers and like pulls you the best email address out of it versus you just signing up for Apollo and getting one. So what I'm saying is they just added an aggregation layer on top of everything else that everyone's doing, because that's probably what someone else is doing in their own spreadsheet, right? There's someone else is going, all right, I can't trust Zoom Info for this source, but I can trust them for this industry. And so it's sort of built around that pattern that someone was doing that no one was talking about until someone made a product around it. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, and it's that next level aggregation level on top that just only became obvious when there were 50 sources of data and everyone knew there were issues with these individual ones.
Yeah, I feel like there is, like, you're right. As the market grows, there are more opportunities, but I think that they're not quite as obvious. Like, I think you have to keep seeking out those people that are doing manual work that don't want to be doing it and trying to find ways to help them. But I think it is like there are, it does feel like there are less obvious opportunities maybe because basically everybody's using software for something and there's not that many spreadsheet things going on. Like there, sure, there's, you know, the obvious ones, but and that's where I wonder if there is maybe more opportunity in like basically going after a market, like a crowded market, like forms. Like there's a bunch of people that have gone into forms and done okay for themselves. Like I'm not going to do that, but you know, find a software that is okay, but that you could make a decent incremental improvement on, and just make sure that they're like, you know, the sleepy kind of company that's not going to do too many things. And like, maybe you've got a shot there. I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do with Power BI. I mean, long-term, I was reading this tweet this morning and it was like, you don't need ABC, you need A, B, and Z. So you need where you are, your next step, and your long-term goal. Hmm. And like, so for me, the long-term goal of HelloQuery is to be your choice over a Power BI. Because now, does that sound crazy? Yeah, I get it. I'm a single person with no customers yet. Like, that sounds crazy. I get it, right? But if you think about it, like, to your point, though, Nate, like, it's report building on top of your database, and people are paying thousands and thousands of dollars a month for Power BI. Mm-hmm. And so what I am in is I feel like I'm in an existing market. Like the market for report builders and UI on top of your database, sure. I think is pretty clear. But of course, it's super crowded. Like I'm not the only person trying to do that, right? I got all those companies with their $15 million of funding, $50 million of funding trying to do it too. So that's when it gets hard, I think, is like, how do you differentiate from those companies?
Well, I think actually you have a lot of advantages over people that have raised money and are small, because they're very incentivized to go after a very particular kind of client. And they also often have trouble getting talent to be able to do certain things. And then I think also for the large incumbents, I think you have like, there's this kind of laziness a lot of times where people, they don't want to change or they would cannibalize their existing market to change. And so then you kind of have an opportunity there. I think what you do need to worry about though a little bit is like if you have a big company like Microsoft that you're going against, they have so many links in to like other places, right? And so you have to kind of find a strategy to go against that.
Right. That's exactly why you can't sit on top of Salesforce, because don't they own Tableau now? So it's like, I think so. So yes, I agree. Like I think, you know, I'm a long, long, long way off from that, but you can, I think what I like about this HelloQuery idea, and I didn't quite feel this way with Simple File Upload, is I can see a path to it being a really, really big company. Mm-hmm. But you know, right now we're just at 0 to 1. We're at baby steps.
Cool. That's fine.
So I'm in the, back to where we said earlier, like I'm in the build a little, show it to the people who are interested, see if it meets their needs, build a little more. So this is what, April 10th today. So I am hoping to have my first paid customer by the end of this month. So we'll see.
Woohoo. Cool.
We'll see. Yeah.
I have a fun little story. I don't know if you guys were familiar with, like, you know, was it the whole customer development thing? Like the whole, you know, where MVP came from, where Eric Reese and that whole, you know, I think it was a book called like Four Steps to the Epiphany way back.
Yes. I forgot. Yeah. Yes, right? I remember that. Yeah.
And one of their case studies, right, was like Webvan, right, which was the whole like grocery delivery thing.
Yeah.
If you recall, that's one of their case studies that they said like failed, and they failed to do customer development and all of this type of thing. And again, don't know if it's true. I don't remember where I read it, but I read it probably on Twitter. But someone was talking about, or maybe it was a podcaster, like actually, you know, they said Webvan didn't fail. It actually was successful. Their bigger problem was not the customer development and those types of things. It was they actually tried to scale it way too fast. They actually had it working in very small, let's say like certain cities or certain rural areas. The problem is they try to go like across the US like way too fast. And it was like they had signals of it, let's say, working in Minneapolis, but not in all these other ones, but they had to deem it all like it was an all or nothing play because of the money they raised.
Because of the money.
They were a public company and all that type of thing. But they had these strong signals of paths. And instead of going like, you know, basically more of like mastering one city, completing the playbook, understanding the playbook, and then rolling it out to other ones, they kind of tried to do it all apparently at once versus like you hear now about all the, you know, Instacart, the Uber, all these ones, and they had more of a rollout strategy. It was more of like nail one city, you know, you need three college kids, you need like this, you need a point person, you need like this to go like build up that demographic or that city. And they essentially, you know, didn't learn quick enough, and it was more of like they spread too thin, and then that's where they imploded. So it's kind of interesting. And I was like, oh, I could see that now. But again, revisionist history from, you know, 20 some years ago on the whole customer development. So,
yeah.
Anyway, cool. All right. Well, this was super fun. I'm glad you got out of your, you know, podcast cave. And I don't know if we're the first ones to have you back out. I think it's been a while since you recorded.
It's been a while. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great to chat, and like let's hear about this, you know, customer number one. I'm excited to hear how that goes.
I'm so excited. Have me back in 2 months, and we'll see if it worked out. Yeah. It was great to talk to you guys.
Fun.
Thanks for having me.
We should definitely have you back. Cool. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Colleen. All right.
Bye.
Talk to you later, Nate. Bye.
Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Boscher, and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52, 7 years to 22 MRR and zombie startups. Or episode 30, review sites are a necessary evil and hacks to get around them. Thanks again.